Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 7th of June. This hour of the program, we are going to be examining where people voted the way they did and why certain people voted the way they did in the recall election. In today's Milwaukee Journal, an article by Craig Gilbert shows that Scott Walker won all but 12 of the state's 72 counties. He did worse in some parts of the state than he did in 2010 in Milwaukee, Dane, Kenosha, and Racine counties, La Crosse in the west, Rock in the south, and Douglas in the far north. But he did better in most counties, and the biggest gains were in northern Wisconsin, Ozaukee, Waukesha, and Washington that had huge voter turnouts. And we're going to be talking with Dante Chinney, who's been looking at the communities in this country and says that we don't really have red states and blue states. What we have are boom towns, campus and career areas, emptying nests, evangelical epicenters, immigration areas, industrial areas, military bastions, minority, central, moneyed burbs, Mormon outposts, probably not applicable to the state of Wisconsin, service worker centers, and tractor country. He, of course, has been keenly observing, as have many people, what happened in Wisconsin on Tuesday in terms of the vote. And he is of Patchwork Nation. He wrote the very interesting book, Our Patchwork Nation, The Surprising Truth About the Real America, the 12 community types that make up our nation. And he's been following Wisconsin very closely. He, of course, does television work and radio work. The Patchwork Nation Project is what he's been working on since the run-up to the 2008 presidential election. It's a collaboration among the Christian Science Monitor, PBS NewsHour, and PBS member stations. He's been covering politics for a long time, and we always appreciate his thoughtful analysis. We'll be welcoming phone calls during the course of the hour. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org, and our email address is the Kathleen Dunn Show, where I must tell you, if you want to follow along with us, we have put Dante's map of the state of Wisconsin on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can follow along with us and look at where people voted in certain counties, which is helpful to understanding what happened in the election on Tuesday. Dante, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me on.
The night of the recall, you said on one of your blogs that the story of Wisconsin can be found in three counties, and those are Waukesha, Washington, and what's the third here?
Ozaukee,
of course, counties. What happened there that you paid particular attention to?
Well, those three counties around Milwaukee are what I call moneyed burbs in Patchwork Nation. These are, you know, largely suburban, wealthier areas on the whole. And back in 2008, those counties nationally, Barack Obama won the moneyed burbs. But those, you know, the money burbs you have in Wisconsin are a little more conservative. He lost them in Wisconsin, but he lost them only by about 6 points. And so, you know, the question to me going into Tuesday night was a couple of things. First of all, in 2010, you have, you know, obviously it's an off-year election. You had a big dropout. You have a big drop-off in turnout. But you had a smaller drop-off in turnout in those three counties, in particular around Milwaukee. So my question was, you know, would the rest of the state, you know, kind of catch up and offset this massive advantage? Because Walker did have a massive advantage in those counties in 2010. Or even would it be that as you got higher turnout, maybe those numbers in those three counties would look a little more like they did in 2008? And if the margins there are closer, you know, it's a completely different election. But, I mean, you know, you're right. He didn't win many. Walker won almost every county except for 12. But in those three counties, he racked up a massive margin.
Huge numbers.
150,000 vote margin, I think, is what he ended up with out of those places. I mean, you're talking about in Washington, you know, he carried 76% of the vote in Washington County. You know, that's unreal. And in Waukesha, 73% of the vote. And that's, well, you know, Waukesha's a big county.
Exactly.
And that's really where this election was won and lost. You've had to figure that in the end, Barrett was going to do well in Milwaukee because it's a city county and Democrats generally do well there. And in Dane, It's Madison. It's a pretty a pretty liberal part of the state. But he did so poorly in those suburban areas. And then the other thing we can talk about a little more as we go on is the upstate thing was really interesting to me, because what Scott Walker did when he decided he was going to try to limit the basically the bargaining power of public unions was to say, like, look, I'm going to say that, you know, I'm going to cut back essentially on the earnings for people who work, not just as teachers, which is everybody's talking about, road crews, all sorts of public employees. I guess what police were exempted, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a real effect in these small counties, because a lot of the work in those places is public work. They're public unions. They're county workers, they work for the school system, or they work for the state in some way. And I wondered if what was going to happen is if the people in those places were going to say, you know, like, wow, this is going to hurt us in our pocketbooks. Because ultimately, you know, this is what I do with Patchwork Nation. When you take money out of those places, I mean, I know the idea is you got to balance the budget. Everybody's got to balance the budget, and we are in real problems almost everywhere in terms of getting our fiscal house in order. But when you take money out of those households, you're really pulling spending power out of the communities. And in those rural communities in particular, there's not a lot of ways to make up that loss. You know, they've seen those rural communities, you know, those are the places where the plant has closed in a lot of places.
Right.
You know, the one thing or what there was in town that was bringing in money from outside is gone. And they're increasingly reliant, actually, on public employment. So I wondered what was going to happen. But, you know, obviously what happened was the people in those counties came out and they voted for Walker.
Mm-hmm. And can you give us a little bit of an understanding as to why that would have happened?
Well, that's what a lot of people, I think, are going to be trying to figure out for the next obviously for the next 5 months, but I think after that.
Yes, for a long time, I think.
Yeah, I think that's true, because I don't think the recall vote is going to tell you much about November. I said that before, and I think regardless of who won, I don't think it was really going to tell you as much as everybody thought it was going to tell you. But what I was looking for was the longer trends about, well, what about these places that have kind of gotten the short shrift, and really in the way the new economy is shaping up in the United States, they're getting the short shrift. They're continuing to get the short shrift. Are they gonna say, you know, look, this is hurting us, or are they gonna say, like, you know, wow? I'm not sure what happened, but one way of reading it is this: you look down the street, you know that you don't have any money anymore, all right? Or maybe you know your private sector job has dried up, it's gone away, and you look down the street and there's somebody who's still doing quite well, and your feeling is like, well, that's not fair. Which is a reading of this, and it's like, look, the state is, we've got to get our fiscal house in order. It's not fair that you're making as much money as you are. That is, you know, I understand why people would feel that way. The problem is, when you do that enough, you pull money out of the community, and it's hard to see how the community, how it rights itself. But it really could be looking around just saying, this isn't fair.
Mm-hmm. And what about during the last couple of years, we've seen an Occupy movement, we've seen some attention by some economists to the lowering of income taxes, or some corporations not having to pay any income taxes, the 99% versus 1%. It would appear that that didn't play out here in Wisconsin much at all, that there wasn't great anger at corporate entities that weren't paying many taxes. The Democrats did make fairness a bit of an issue here, but it didn't seem to resonate in this election, and I'm wondering why.
Well, I think that the Occupy movement in particular, because I've looked at this and I've looked at it a couple different ways, some stuff we haven't been able to publish because the numbers are good, but they're not completely solid. But, you know, when we look at the Occupy movement, we use social media to do some analysis of it. It was really, really extremely focused in on very big cities. And when you think about it that way, you know, where would the Occupy movement have the most pull in a state like Wisconsin? Well, it would matter in Milwaukee, obviously, and it would matter in Madison.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two places where you'd think it would have some kind of pull. You know, my question has been, and for quite some time now, when are these kind of rural, more far-flung locations going to kind of get involved in the populist fight? Because they really haven't yet. And when I say the populist fight, just to be clear, I'm not saying the populist fight, like, when are they all going to come, we're all, and they're going to march, and, you know, we're all going to march off to a beautiful future. My question is just, when do they look at what's going on around them and say, this isn't right, and this isn't fair? And I don't know when that happens. There are a lot of different directions populist movements can go. I don't know which direction they'd go in, those more rural locations. But they just haven't fully engaged in the populist fight yet. And I do think that they will, and I expect it in the next decade or so, just because the economic situation in this country, as much as every candidate is going to promise you they're going to fix it, they're not going to fix it. Because there's just it's about global economic forces that are very hard to control. And really, our economic future is increasingly not in our hands anymore. And at some point, people in those more rural locations are just going to say, this isn't right, and something has to be done for us. And I don't know when that's going to happen or what it's going to look like, but I do expect it. It hasn't happened yet, but I'm expecting it sometime in the next decade.
You write in your book about industrial metropolis, and let's look at the city of Milwaukee for a moment here. Tom Barrett won Milwaukee and Dane County, but evidently the numbers, he only won them by 40,000 more votes than he won them in 2010 and lost the rest of the state by 90,000 more than he lost in 2010. What are we seeing with a city like Milwaukee? And so much was said that this city had to turn out in huge numbers. It was a little better than 2010, not huge numbers. What are you seeing in terms of city votes?
Well, I mean, you know, when you get into those more urban locations, it's hard to engage the voters. And these are voters, even because, you know, I was not there to see any of the run-up you guys had to this election. But from what I heard, you were just under a, you know, close to 24-hour ad barrage.
Yes, you're right. We were. Yes.
But even that is not really a huge issue for, you know, when you get into big urban environments, the issues that move those voters are different. And I think even in this case, I don't know, you know, the union, this, the way this thing was framed by in a lot of the media, and I think correctly, is this was about, you know, this was about unions. And I think for a lot of the people living, if you're a poor person living in a big urban environment, you know, you're not really sure how that concerns you. I mean, somebody could make a very good argument as to how it concerns you and why it should matter to you, but that doesn't mean it does matter to you. And I think that, you know, what you're going to see, it'll be different in 2012 because it's a presidential race, and I do think that there are many people have wondered what's going to happen with the two of the big groups for Barack Obama in 2008 were the younger voters, you know, collegiate voters, and African Americans. And there has been a lot of questioning as to will those groups turn out for him again in 2012. My feeling is that you are going to get turnout from African American voters, particularly in big cities. I think they're still going to be able to get those voters out because it's hugely significant. I mean, it's the first, you know, African American president in U.S. history, and they are going to support him. But so I think you'll see the numbers up there. I'm actually in Ann Arbor, Michigan right now, and my question is, are the college voters fully engaged? I'm not completely sure about that. But my guess is you'll see the urban voters engaged in the presidential election. I'm just not sure you could make the argument to them maybe they felt this recall election did not concern them as much as it concerned some other folks.
Would you, as a result of what you're seeing and what you saw in Wisconsin, would you add any communities or change your communities if you did an update?
Well, we'll do an update after the election. And I think that some things will shift one way or the other, but not just out of Wisconsin yet, no. I mean, I think that I've been really surprised. The groups and the numbers we've seen with these types we've created have worked pretty well. I think the thing that was really interesting to me about 2008 was Barack Obama won those small town places, right, in Wisconsin. He was able to do quite well in the small town service worker centers and in those aging, emptying nests. But, you know, I know that you've seen the exit polls coming out of the recall election. And the recall, you know, the exit polls out of the recall election show that, you know, Barack Obama would still carry Wisconsin by a comfortable margin. And that's, I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of oddities about recall elections that are hard to figure. And now, whether or not those exit poll numbers were true or not, we'll see. I mean, I can't get those broken down in my community types. I wish I could. Just the data is not big enough. But, you know, we'll go back and redo everything definitely after the 2012 election and reevaluate where everything is. But I think that right now what we have still works. I think that what you had in Wisconsin in this recall election was something really different and maybe more different than a lot of people realized.
Dante Chinney is our guest this hour, journalist, creator of the multimedia project Patchwork Nation. His book is Our Patchwork Nation, The Surprising Truth About the Real America. And we're looking at what happened in various communities on Tuesday around the state of Wisconsin. Our lines are all filled. There will eventually be openings. You can also, well, let me give you the number, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And you can also leave a message if you want, even if we can't get to it on the air. It's interesting to have a conversation from our listeners on our Facebook page. I love reading those comments. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program, we'll talk about Ray Bradbury. He died yesterday at the age of 91. And oh, the stories we will hear about his young life, particularly. He learned what he was going to do and started doing his writing when he was 12 years old, based on a remarkable experience at a carnival, of all places. We'll be speaking the second hour of the program with a professor of English and the director of the Center for Ray Bradbury Studies at Indiana University. Two phone calls now for Dante Chinney. Let's start with Scott. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just have one quick question, one comment. The question regarding the exit polls, and they showed the exit polls as being 50-50 for Walker and Barrett when they were so far off. Why do they keep continuing to use the exit polls as proof that Obama's doing so well in Wisconsin when the exit polls were wrong? That's my first question. And my point that I like to mention is what I find really unique about this election, and I can't explain it and why it's so different. I may be off by a point or two, but roughly 37% of union households voted for Walker. And to me, that's the most fascinating statistic about this election.
Yes, it is fascinating. Dante?
Well, I think that, and I'm actually writing something this week for the Wall Street Journal about this, I think that we do have this tendency, I think, with answering the second question here first. We have this tendency to think, and we do this with all sorts of voters, but with union voters, it's like, well, union voters, they're all Democrats. You know, I grew up in Macomb County in Michigan, which is heavily union. And it went heavily for Ronald Reagan in 1980, and it often votes Republican as on a whole host of issues, because union members tend to be conservative in a bunch of different areas. Remember, those are union members voting for Walker, not public union members. And I think that there may be some feeling that, you know, look, the public unions have stuff that they shouldn't have, and that, you know, we quote unquote, you know, as other unions, don't think is fair.
So we would assume those were private union votes?
I would say, probably. I mean, you can't know for sure unless it's really broken out. But, I mean, you know, there's a, you know, that's the private union's a lot of folks. It's UAW. It's, you know, it's Teamsters. I mean, mm-hmm. It's a whole host of different unions out there that make up, you know, what Union America is. On the exit polls thing, and now I'm not sure if the exit polls show it was even. Maybe they might have. But, I mean, if the exit polls showed that it was even, but Walker still won by what he did, I think the most telling number to me was in the exit polls was 60% of those polled in the exit poll thought that recall should only be used for a, you know, basically a really horrible infraction, that, you know, something that's an ethics infraction or something like that. So it's completely possible that people said, the good people of Wisconsin turned out to vote and said, you know, I don't like Scott Walker, but you know something, we can't just be recalling people because we don't like them. And I think that that's, I mean, 60% of the people said that it's you should only remove somebody if they've done something grievously wrong.
Let me ask a follow-up about this exit polling, too, because I'm wondering if there were a couple different sets of exit polling done. Scott's right that all of that, I was following Twitter like mad that night, and CNN and NBC and everybody was saying this was a 50-50 race, and then it was called 45 minutes later. I think he was referring to
that. Oh, I see what you mean.
Is that a different set of exit polling than what looks at, you know, the union households and how people voted last time? And are there different sets of polling going on?
There's different sets of polling going on, but there's generally one set of exit polls. But, I mean, what you would say when you looked at that is, you know, the results were 6%. Or, you know, Walker was, you know, Walker won ultimately by 6%, right? Was that the final? I think it was the final percentage. Let me look real quick. And, you know, 6% is, I don't think you would call anything based on exit polls in 6%. And I think you would say, if you saw a 6% difference in the exit polls, and you saw the tightening that you saw going into the going into election night, then you would say, you know, I'm even if it wasn't a six, even if it wasn't fully 6%, I'm sure it was less than that in the exit polls. If it's something like within 2, 3, 4 points, you're going to say it's going to be a barn burner, because it's, you know, reading exit polls is not an exact science. I mean,
no, I guess it's not. Right. Thanks, Scott, for the call. Matt in Prescott. Hi, Matt.
Hi, I'm actually driving a milk truck hauling milk, and I pick up milk from about 40 to 50 different farms. So I think I have a pretty good cross section of what country people are, and they are really engaged people from the rural areas. And I think basically the argument that they voted for Walker because they're jealous of their government employee or government workers, you know, everything that they get. I think that's not correct. Most people voted for Walker because he ran on making a promise to take care of the state budget, and he did that, and that's why people voted for him again, and that's why he won so many counties in the small towns, things like that, because he took a stand and he stuck with it. The other argument is being made is that, oh, the Walker administration, they spent millions and millions more dollars. Well, the truth is, I believe that more people from day one took a stand and knew who they're going to vote for. There's very few independent, middle-of-the-road voters in the state, and I think everyone knows that. I think, Kathleen, you would know that, too, based on a lot of the calls. And I think that's what the point I was just going to make, was the fact that coming from a very extremely rural area, people are very engaged and very very informed, and they took their stand because of it's what they believed, that Walker was right and what he had done and what kind of reforms he's making within the state system. So.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks for your call.
I was going to say, I was hoping he'd stay on just for 1 second, because the point is not necessarily that they're jealous, but there is this question of look, we have to balance the budget. How do we balance the budget? Right? There are a lot of ways you could balance the budget, and that's, you know, that's what I'd say. And, you know, is it you know, jealous is the wrong word, but is it, you know, like, we got to balance the budget some way? You know, those guys have too much is one way of reading it, and I think that's, you know, those guys have too much. That is what you're really saying. It's, you know, because the other way you could say it is like, you know, we've got to balance the budget. People should give more, but, you know, other people should kick in more. We should find a way to raise money from other kinds of folks. But the idea that you take it away from the public unions, I'm not saying it's jealousy necessarily, but it is that, you know, those people have to make some sacrifices, and they've got to take some cuts, is, I think, the way voters look at it. And I think that they very well may think that, and everybody has their own opinion. That's fine. What I'm saying is, in the end, what they're doing, whether they like it or not, is you are pulling money out of your community. I mean, I find when I look at these numbers, and I've looked at these numbers a lot, when you start talking about cutting government, and when you start talking about cutting cutting government workers' money, there's this feeling that what it really means is there's going to be, we're going to get those fat cats in the national perspective, we're going to get those fat cats in Washington. That'll teach them. We'll cut government. Or in the state level, I think you think about it going down to the state house and getting rid of bureaucracy, right, or something like that. That's not really the way it works. I think what tends to happen, actually, is, you know, government, state and national, employ people all over the place. And, you know, what you're going to find is those jobs that get cut, or those benefits that get cut from the people making a lot of money, you know, quote-unquote, those people actually, they're going to be just fine. The jobs that get cut, they'll end up being contractor positions anyway. And the money that gets cut from wealthy state and federal employees, there just aren't as many of them as you think there are. And ultimately, when you make those cuts, it is going to come back. It's going to come back and hit smaller places in a lot of ways that people just haven't really, the ramifications haven't, you know, been fully thought through, I don't think.
Thank you, Matt, for your call. Deb in Plymouth. Hi.
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 I'm going to have to say I really think that you're right on when you're saying that the jealousy issue was a big one. one of the things I'm wondering is, when I look at the big picture here, I really think that the whole purpose behind all this of targeting public employees, because I'm a retired teacher, we were an easy target, and also taking union money out of the fall election. And I pounded on a lot of doors and found a lot of people, I don't think, understand the bigger focus here was actually to get union money out of the fall election, followed by making trial lawyers, because they were also Obama supporters monetarily, and getting them out of the election as well. And, I don't hear people talking about that.
That's a really interesting point, actually. I think that's a fascinating point, just in terms of there's so much money labor has to spend. And now I think a lot of it is going to end up being limited to Wisconsin. I think there will be labor money spent in the fall elsewhere. But you're right. That's a very interesting way of looking at it. And I would say to the other caller's point, this idea that the money really didn't make a difference. It's like, well, I don't know. It's true that I've seen numbers saying that nobody really decided anything in the last couple of weeks. Most of the decisions were made by May, but money is still money. And, having a message pounded in your head, it's hard to say that doesn't have an impact. If not, why spend it?
What do you think about the possibility, Dante, of this state healing itself? It's striking to me that the thoughts on the issues and the differences in how we should go about certain kinds of public policy issues are so different that I'm finding it hard to understand how we're going to heal here, how compromise is going to take place. What do you think?
Well, I think we're having, I don't think it's just there. I mean, I think we're having a big national debate about what to do with this country right now. And the debate is necessary because we really have kind of hit a turning point where, there is the sense that what happened in this last recession was something different. And I think that sense is correct. I mean, I think when you look at the data over the last 30 years, you can see that we've been leading to someplace and we're getting there rapidly now. And we're going to have a very long discussion about how we think we're going to make this economy work and how we're going to grow it. And I think the Republican argument largely is that you have to make sure that the people who create jobs have money to create jobs, which means tends to be wealthier people. And the Democratic argument is that these are stereotypes of arguments, but the Democratic argument is no, you've got to make sure that the people on the bottom have more because they got to spend the money. Those two points of view are really diametrically opposed, and I don't know. I think we're going to have look. It's like I said. I've said for years now that we're going into an extremely turbulent time in American politics because this fight, we're going to have this fight, and we're going to have it over and over. And this whole thing that Wisconsin had the recall vote, that's decided. Nothing is going to be decided. I'm going to say it right now. Nothing is going to be decided in the 2012 election. And regardless of what anybody thinks, nothing's really going to be decided. We're going to be fighting this fight over and over again for the next decade and maybe even a little more until we figure out which way we're going to go. And we don't figure out which way we're going to go all at once. We try some things. We find out if they work. Then we go back and we try some other things. And we find out if those things work. And it's going to be a really long, painful, and convoluted process.
Deb, thanks for your call. Kathy in Waupaca, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking just yesterday, kind of went unnoticed, was the anniversary of D-Day. And I think how many people fought and died for our right to vote, a right for a say in our government. And turnout in Wisconsin was what, 62 to 65%. Would you have been satisfied with a grade like that in school? That's failing.
I think our turnout was lower than that. It was 57%.
I mean, how do we address that? How do we get people to care enough to vote? That's all I want to say.
Thank you. Thanks, Kathy.
You guys know this, of course, but, Wisconsin's really good, actually, in terms of turnout. I mean, I look at the numbers nationally. It's excellent. It's a lot of the states up in the upper northwest. Wisconsin's very good for turnout. Minnesota's very good for turnout. And most people would tell you, and it is a sad comment on the times, but 57% for a recall election, that's pretty good. I mean, those are really good numbers. And, you know, in the vote in the fall, my guess is you'll be up around, you know, 65, something like that. How do you get it higher than that? I don't know. I mean, the one reading that political scientists would often say about this is, like, you know, the people who don't come out to vote are the ones who are just kind of satisfied with the way things are. I don't know if that's really true, or maybe they've just given up hope. How do you fix it? I don't know if you can. I mean, it's you're going to have to start at a very young age and try to teach children the importance of voting. It takes it, but it's. I think we are where we are right now, and again, I think you guys should be really happy that you got your numbers where you have them.
I was listening to some analysis last night, national show, and this issue, it keeps coming up of money, and I'd like for you to address it, because there was an incredible amount of money spent in Wisconsin on this recall, and it was true that the Republicans spent 7-1, and the television ads were really incessant. And I'm wondering if indeed people do look at those and that's how they get their information about how they're going to vote, if they are effective, because the money advantage will probably, it'll be different in the presidential election, but it was a huge factor in terms of what we saw in Wisconsin.
Right. Well, the numbers will be, look, the Republicans are going to have a lot of money, but it's not going to be anything like 7-1. You know, I doubt it'll. If you're in a battleground state, I don't even think it's going to be 2-1. I mean, if you're in a true battleground state, I think, you know, the Democrats. Remember, you're fighting a national. They're fighting quote unquote national campaigns, but they're not really. They're ultimately the 2012 election is decided by maybe 8 states in the end, really, and that's where the money will all go. And so the in terms of that, the advertising battlefield will be a lot more even. I don't know how much difference it makes. And, I think what you're really fighting for is, your one caller said there are very few uncommitted voters out there. I think that's really true, or true independent voters. But, you know, Scott Walker won that race, but he won it by 6%. So 6% is not a big number, right? If you're able to swing 3% one way or the other, you know, it can be a very small number of uncommitted voters or quote unquote independent voters that decide things, and you're just spending all that money to reach that tiny little bit of vote that you need. And then the other reason you're spending that money is to basically do what you can to gin up your side, get them as fired up as you possibly can,
yes,
and get them to turn out.
Yes, and he did that. That definitely happened.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Jim in Ashland, hi.
Hi. I'm just wondering what your guest would think in his patchwork nation about our little corner of the state up here. When you look at the results from June 5th, our three counties, Ashland, Bayfield, Douglas, kind of stand out nice and blue.
That's true.
And up here, we knocked ourselves out collecting signatures and getting out the vote, and we did it up here. But it wasn't enough to offset Waukesha and Washington counties. Where do we fit into your model?
Well, you guys are where I actually kind of I wondered if there were going to be more counties like you guys, actually. I mean, there is a basically the top, I mean, one way of looking at it, if you look on the map, is like kind of the top two rows of counties in northern Wisconsin and some other counties around the state are these things called service worker centers. And they are less densely populated, generally rural populations, or more rural communities. And I kind of thought what I was wondering was, were those the places that were going to turn out and do what your three counties did? But apparently, that's not true. Now, I don't know why it didn't happen in the other places, and I'm kind of curious to study it. And also these aging communities that are also tend to be somewhat rural, places called emptying nests. I was wondering what was going to happen with them. But, you know, the service worker centers, not your three counties, but that type of county in general, ended up going for Walker, you know, by a pretty substantial margin, by about 12 percentage points. And those aging emptying nests, he did much better even. Hmm. I mean, his margin was about 22 percentage points. I have not looked close enough to see how much of that was driven by turnout or how much of it, but when you have margins that big, it can't just be turnout. I mean, it has to be that people in those communities were convinced that Walker was their man.
What did you see on the ground? You mentioned that you were very organized, Jim. Why do you think Barrett won those counties heavily?
We got the turnout. I think our percentages are much higher than statewide. I think the pure numbers, not just the percentages, but the pure numbers are very unusual up here. And people care. We're still, I think, as divided as the rest of the state, but just a little bluer.
Can I ask what are the main sources of employment up there in those three counties up there in particular? I mean, it's
I believe the biggest employer in Ashland County is actually the Bad River Indian Reservation with their casino. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of public workers, school districts, county workers. We have tourism, of course,
right?
There's a 12-month factor now, and we have, I think, a pretty good quality of life up here too.
Yeah, it is remarkable that, you know, other than those three counties, I mean, Walker did very well up there, and those are the counties I was wondering where you have enough public sector workers if they were gonna turn out.
I think that the Democrats also did well in Menominee County, which would be, he mentioned the reservation. I think that there were, from my analysis here,
yes,
a number of people in Indian Nation who voted Democratic.
Huge. He did very well there, but you know, it's ultimately the numbers. It's really hard to offset what you have down there,
mm-hmm,
in the burbs.
They were small, right? Jim, thanks so much for your call. Sarah in Zion, hi.
Hi, thanks a lot. Can we talk a little bit more about the urban vote? Just because,
sure.
I mean, it's certainly true that in the national media it was all about the unions, but my impression, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, but from listening to WPR and reading the Kenosha paper, my impression is that the state media was drawing, I mean, it was just as much about cuts to education and health care and voter ID, things that would be really important to urban voters. So I'm just wondering, is it really that people in the state were mostly thinking it was the union issue, or is there something else going on in the cities?
Yeah, but you know, and that's a question. To really get that sentiment, I wasn't there for it. I've been other places, but I would have been. It would have been really interesting to spend that day, spend Tuesday in Milwaukee, and looking at the turnout in poorer communities in Milwaukee. It would have been fascinating to see what was going on there, because, you know, I was there last year when just before you guys had your state senate recalls, and there was a sense that it was, at least to some extent, about education cuts was one thing I heard quite a bit about. But, you know, maybe it's hard, you know, that in those communities, it may be a place where it is tough to get out the vote when the ad advantage, those might be communities where the ad advantage just really, like, hammered, you know, was detrimental to the Democrats. I mean, it's really possible.
And yet, those are also the communities I live in the city. Those are also communities where there were a lot of ads placed on minority radio stations, which I think we overlook. I think they were effective, and the minority vote was up in the city of Milwaukee compared to 2010, nowhere near what it
right.
needed to be, but it was up.
And probably not anywhere near where it was. I haven't looked at the precinct vote yet, but probably not anywhere near where it was for 2008.
Exactly. No, nowhere near 2008. 2008 was a special election.
Yeah, it really was.
We're going to welcome more phone calls. Dante Chinney is our guest this hour. He is of Patchwork Nation fame. He's the author of Our Patchwork Nation, The Surprising Truth About the Real America, the 12 Community Types That Make Up Our Nation. And we're looking at how the community types voted in the recall election on Tuesday. 800-486-8655 is our number. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And you can also use our Facebook page. It would be interesting to read your comments, so post something even if we can't get to it on the air. And that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program this Thursday, we'll talk about Ray Bradbury. Randy is our next caller in Kewaskum. Hi, Randy.
Thanks taking my call.
Sure.
I happen to be another mill caller. I come from Northern Washington County, and you know, you characterize that as urban. Well, the part of Washington County I come from is basically tractor country. And you know, the thing about this, you know, your guest, you know, tried to go and, oh, you know, the envy. You know, we have to go and take something. Well, these public union members shot themselves in the foot with the rabid demonstrations in Madison. I also have spent time in a classroom. I've been in front of a classroom. I have great respect for most teachers, and the teachers that I don't have any respect for are the ones that the union would protect the most. Teachers have been put front and center in Madison to protect the rest of the public unions. Teachers are an anomaly among unionized workers. They're the only ones that will put one extra minute of time in to get the job done without getting paid 10 minutes extra work. But what aggravated people out here is to see these teachers at the protests during the week when they're supposed to be at their job complaining. And there's a lot of teachers out there that are underpaid. There's also teachers out there that, with the union scale, are way overpaid because they get paid like any union for the number of amount of time they've been there. There's a lot of other ways to cut government without cutting people like teachers or the bottom end of the public workers where the real work is done. All government sectors have a huge and growing middle section with the dead weight. In the last 30, 40 years, the biggest growth in education has been administration. And you want to talk about some useless lumps? That's where they are.
Let me ask, Randy, I understand your point of view here. Let me ask if you have any concern about corporate Wisconsin. Do you think that they are paying their fair share in taxes?
I am corporate Wisconsin. I'm a small business owner.
Right.
My taxes went up under Jim Doyle. So did all of corporate Wisconsin. And when it comes down to it, all the Democrats want from us is more. You know, if you're a big business, you might be able to get something from the Democrats, say somebody like General Electric that paid no tax because they got special targeted tax breaks from the Obama administration for getting into green energy. So big business kind of stands on its own and gets benefits from both. Small business, the only thing we get from the Democrats is the bill.
All right, Dante.
Well, I think that, you know, there's a lot of frustration out there from people like your caller, it's hard to know if it, you know, look, you can never know the motivations of a voter who voted, but I think there are a lot of people who felt the way that he did who came out and voted for Walker on Tuesday. I mean, I will say, you know, for what it's worth, my father actually was a teacher, and he was the head of the union at the high school, and by the end he was extremely disappointed with what the union had become, because he felt it had really kind of lost its way. These sentiments appear everywhere. He would be rolling over his grave if he heard this. You know, that's not to say that he was against the union, but he definitely saw there were some flaws with it. I just think that. I think the caller is probably right in terms of, you know, I think everybody's who talks about the teachers union protecting poor teachers. Look, if your kids go to a big city school system as mine do, it's always a concern. You know, I just think the question is the money has to come from somewhere, and I do understand what the caller is saying about corporate America needs the money, but I really do think, man, that when you look at the economy closely, what really makes this economy go is people spending money, and it's hard to imagine how you get the economy going again by cutting the amount of money that people have to spend. I'm sorry, when I look at the numbers, that's what I see.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's also true that people who work for government are part of the economy.
Yes. Yeah, and the other thing is one of the things that's really hit the public sector unions in particular hard. Look. The public sector has not. I know there are all sorts of stories about all these rich people in the public sector. There just aren't that many of them. The bottom line is the attraction for the public sector in the past has been, look, you're not going to get paid as much as people in the private sector, but you're probably going to keep your job, and we're going to take care of you with some good benefits. That's the way the system worked. And then what happened was we hit a very, very, very bumpy patch, which we're going to be in for quite some time now. And people look around, and they're like, well, my God, look at the benefits that people in the public sector unions have. And it's like, well, you know, part of the deal was they had that to make up for not having as good a pay as some other people, and, you know, to not basically that it's not as exciting a job. That in some ways the opportunities for advancement may not be the same as they are in some other sectors. But that doesn't matter now. What matters now is everybody has had to take cutbacks in the private sector, and they look at what's happened to the public sector, and they want them to have to, you know, they need to kick something into.
Yeah. Jean in Wauwatosa, hi.
Hi, good morning. So many thoughts. What a great conversation. So I've seen charts that the people that receive food stamps, they spend so much more per dollar than everybody else, especially the one percenters. And then I heard, sorry, this is a little different than I told the screener because I just wanted to work off the guest. And so I heard this week that they're talking about cutting those food stamps even more. So this contracting and restricting is not going to help anybody. Is this part of the overall Republican strategy to get Obama out of the White House?
I don't know if it's part of the Republican strategy. I do think there's a genuine difference of opinion as to how to get the economy going again, I think, anyway. I don't know. I'll be completely honest. Look, I try to be, when I write this stuff, I try to be as just completely straightforward, and this is what the numbers say, and this is what I think it means, as I possibly can. But I do think that the rhetoric around this election right now and how people are going to get this economy started again by, quote-unquote, giving the job creators money, the reason I don't believe it is because job creators aren't stupid. Job creators create jobs when there's money to be made. You know, companies aren't sitting on money right now thinking like, well, I'm not going to create any jobs right now just because they haven't given me enough money to create jobs. When they look at the world around them and they say, like, I can make money by opening a store there, they'll open a store there. You know, and it's not about, I just don't think ultimately it's about them having a tax cut or a tax break. Ultimately, it's going to be about they're going to have to open the store there when there's more disposable income to spend at the store. It's just, it's as I cover this election, the rhetoric really on both sides about the economy, I just find extremely disheartening because I feel it misses the point. And the bill of goods that's being sold to the American people right now about how everybody's going to fix the economy, I don't see it.
The other thing I was wondering, that phrase that the milk deliverer gave us earlier in this hour, that he really liked the governor because he had a message, he had a plan, he took a stand, and he stuck with it.
Right.
And it seems to me as though this hour we're looking at the nuances, and we have every right to do so. Politics can be extremely complicated. What we're living through has a lot of aspects to it. It isn't a black and white thing. There is so much to it. I'm wondering if, though, for whatever reason, we are living in an age where we really want somebody to find a couple messages, take a stand on them, and stick with it, and we applaud that.
I think that's true. But I do think that, because I agree with you. But the thing about that is, I think that we want that until we see that something is or isn't working. And the real problem we have in politics in America, particularly as they concern the economy, is there's this idea that somebody comes in the office and what happens is directly related to what the person did. It's just, when you look at the economy, it just doesn't work that way. It really doesn't. It's, good God, I mean, to try to understand what's going on in the American economy right now,
right,
is right, it's almost impossible. And you know, and to say like, well, so Wisconsin's probably starting to turn the corner. I mean, Michigan has really turned the corner. And that's not because of the policies of Governor Rick Snyder in Michigan or Scott Walker in Wisconsin. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on. And that involves China and India and oil, and it's extremely complicated.
It is, yes. And that's why we have public radio, so we can delve into all these complicated issues. So you're saying we have about a minute left. Give me the national implications, if there are any, to what happened in Wisconsin on Tuesday.
I think the national implications in Wisconsin are for unions a little bit, look, the power of unions is waning. I think that's really true. But I think in terms of the larger implications for what's going to happen in the fall, you can learn a lot more by just looking at the unemployment reports for the next couple months to figure out what's going to happen in the fall than what's happened in Wisconsin. I mean, I think that's going to tell you what happens in the economy, the broader national economy over the next 2 or 3 months will tell the tale.
Interesting. Dante, thank you very much. You're in Michigan. Have fun in Michigan. Coming to Wisconsin soon?
I'll try to get there before the election for sure, yes.
All right. Thanks, Dante.
Thanks.
Dante Chinney, our guest this hour, he is of Patchwork Nation fame. He's been working on a deep understanding of the community types in communities all over the country, and that we really share more depending on what community we're in than what state we're in. His book is Our Patchwork Nation, The Surprising Truth About the Real America, the 12 Community Types That Make Up Our Nation. We have on our Facebook page put the map that looks at how we voted in the state of Wisconsin. So if you go to the Kathleen Dunn Show, you can look at all the counties, the service worker, the big cities, et cetera, to see what the percentage was and the turnout was across the state. Thanks to Brett Jaspers for producing the hour. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee, and thanks for all of your calls. The ramifications of the election will consume more hours down the road, I'm sure. Thanks for listening to this hour. More to come.